Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast, brought to you by Athletes on the Rise. Nowadays, athletes need to develop in multiple ways to obtain college scholarships and professional contracts. Athletes on the Rise will do just that. AOTR uses multidisciplinary sports science knowledge to develop complete athletes mentally, physically, technically, and tactically. We go above and beyond what is expected to give athletes a training experience that is tailored to the individual. We constantly push our athletes outside their comfort zones, and we make sure that athletes are doing the right things in the right way to maximize their development. Athletes on the Rise, training redefined. Follow us online, ask us questions, read our content. Our website is http://aotr.training. Find us on Instagram @aotr.training, Twitter @aotr_training. And facebook.com/AOTR.training. Here from Athletes on the Rise Up Podcast, here with assistant coach for the UW men's basketball program, Coach Kyle Blackburn. How you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing good, Eric. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, definitely. So let's just jump right into it. You know, right now with the coronavirus stuff that's going on, I mean, a lot of issues when it comes to, you know, recruiting and so on and so forth. How are you guys handling it in the current day and age? What are you able to do? What are you not able to do?
Yeah, so it's with the coronavirus, obviously it's affected, you know, everybody across the country in different ways. And with our program, it's no different. You know, we were getting ready to leave for the Big Ten tournament. You know, I packed my bag here at my place and went into the office just like a normal day and just going to get ready to practice and hit the road. And, you know, Michigan and Rutgers were warming up and we were to play the winner of that game. And then they pulled them off the floor and they canceled the Big Ten tournament. That's when kind of everything just kind of set in. And so then we kind of had a team meeting and, you know, kind of discussed. They hadn't canceled the NCAA tournament at that point. So we were just kind of in a wait and see mode. And then when they canceled that NCAA tournament, you know, then we met again with the team, and it was disappointing, obviously, to the whole program because we were playing so well. We had won our last eight. We just won the Big Ten regular season. So everybody was excited to kind of for that next step in the postseason. So to not have that was obviously heartbreaking for a lot of the guys that put time in, and obviously Brevin Pritzel and Michael Ballard for being their last go round as a senior. You know, it was tough for them as well. So, you know, since that point, you know, we've just been trying to stress to our guys to, you know, do our part with the social distancing and, you know, try to check in with each other and, you know, try to get through it together. Our guys are pretty motivated and leadership is great with all those guys. So, I mean, I know they're working and doing their part, you know, to continue to develop their game on their own. And, you know, it's tough talking to some of the guys, you know, the YMCAs and some of the gyms are closed down
right
where they're at. So, you know, gym availability has been tough, but, you know, I'll see like Brad Davison will post stuff. He's got a hoop in his backyard. He's shooting around and getting some work in that way. So I know those guys will do their part, and hopefully when this thing settles, you know, we can get back together and start working towards next season.
Right. So are you guys doing any specific, like, hey, this is a minimum of what you should be doing on your own? We know things are shut down, but, you know, whether it be, you know, ball handling, shooting, you know, watching film, like, do you guys have any requirements, or is it basically like open, let the guys doing what they can figure out what to do?
Yeah, we don't require them. Some of the guys will reach out to, like, Coach Oliver is really good with player development. So some of the guards will lean on him on some, you know, what they should be improving on. And Coach Oliver actually put together some individual development plans for those guys. So they all know what they need to do. And a lot of them will have personal trainers, you know, back home where they're at and different guys that want to work these guys out. And, you know, we hope they don't change too much sometimes, like, hey, you gotta tweak this or do that, you know, and it's kind of maybe against what we want, but it's a lot of times those guys are good. And if they're getting work in that way, then we know they're going to improve and, And like what I touched on, the leadership part, all these guys know, you know, what a good drill is, what productive work is on the floor versus, you know, just not productive work and just kind of being out there. So, you know, we stress them to not play too many kind of pickup games where it's not intense and all that. They don't have to worry about it now in this kind of current state.
Right.
So hopefully they're getting a lot of one-on-one skill work and getting some shots up.
Sure. So, I mean, going into that a little bit, it sounds like, you know, a lot of those guys have their guys that they have trust and faith in that have developed them to a certain point. How are those relationships navigated between like the coaching staff and those people that have developed them up to that point? Is that a pretty amicable like relationship where they reach out to you guys, talk about what they see and what you see and just kind of, you know, kind of have those conversations back and forth, or what do those relationships look like?
There's not a ton of relationship that way, I would say. You know, we're fortunate enough to where we get a lot of time with our players. Like in a normal, you know, off season, we would have a full spring. Anytime that they're in class, that full spring period where we would do spring workouts, and right away we would dive into some player development stuff. And then in the summer, we get 8 weeks with them too. So there's not a ton of, and then obviously we roll into our fall stuff. And so Division I, we're lucky enough that we get a lot of time with these guys. So there's not a ton of time for them to work outside with outside trainers and things, but there is a little bit where, you know, they'll go in and, you know, they'll work on maybe some more extravagant moves that then we'll touch on, you know, snake the ball screen, go through two cones, do a spin, you know, some of that stuff we won't do, but it's fun for them to kind of to work on that stuff and see kind of what they can, you know, imagine and add to their game that way.
Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the day-to-day from a player perspective, then we'll get into the coaches. But like when you're looking at preseason, you know, there in the fall and then during the season, off season, Let's kind of go through each of those stages and what they're doing from a skill development standpoint, from on court, you know, tactical team development stuff, strength and conditioning, you know, school, you know, what is that looking like for them?
Yeah, so our strength and conditioning program in the off season is probably number one. We definitely in the Big Ten, we want to bring in, you know, big bodies, and a lot of times these 6'10", you know, 6'11" guys are, you know, they're just the way their body mechanics are made up that they have to put weight on. And it's hard to do. It's hard for, you know, some big, long guys to put weight on. So we'll get them right away adapted to our strength and conditioning program. And, you know, some of these guys, even at really good schools, just they don't know how to lift and they don't know how to work out. So it's a lot of education too that way. So we'll get them adapted to that right away and in the strength program. And that's where the majority of the work will be is changing their bodies and, you know, getting them ready to compete on a Big Ten level. And then as far, you know, off season on the court, we get 2 hours a week with them on the court. So Coach Guard will kind of mix it up on how we do that. Sometimes we'll do smaller group work. We'll work specifically with positions, and we'll split it up to like maybe 2 1-hour small group work. You know, sometimes we'll do 2 full team 1 hour practices. And a lot of those in the summer are focused on skill development. We won't do a ton of team stuff just because obviously we have so much practice time and so much leading up when we get them back in the fall that we really don't have to put anything in or talk about much team stuff. So it's pretty, you know, focused on developing the player. And a lot of these guys come into the program have goals beyond Wisconsin too. They want to play professionally, whether that be overseas or in the NBA. So we definitely want to do our part to help them get bigger, faster, stronger. And then if we can develop their shot into a certain, or give them some, you know, low post moves or whatever it may be that they can add to their game to make sure they're getting better too. And then when it gets into the fall, you know, they'll have August off to themselves to go back home, and kind of they'll continue to work out and stay on the plan and not hopefully lose anything that we've gained in that June and July period. But then we get them back in the fall, and then we get them right back in the weight room and work in there. And then we'll do our conditioning. Like that's when the famous run the hill with Coach Ryan and into Coach Guard comes in play. So we'll have some different, you know, challenging workouts that way. And Getting these guys
and team building stuff with that stuff too. I mean, if you guys can sweat and break together, I mean, that's what brings teams together a lot of times.
Yep, absolutely. And then when you come back with that August period, usually they're chomping at the bit to get back into school and into working out with each other, because, you know, even a month off, these guys spend so much time together, but a month off feels like an eternity for some of these guys. So it's good to see them energized coming back in the fall. And so, yeah, that'll be that fall period, kind of gearing up for the season. And then when full practice rolls around, we'll put a few things in the fall. We'll talk about a couple things, you know, specifically mostly defense and kind of refreshers and reminders, because these guys will play some open gyms on their own as well. The captains will kind of organize it. So we want those to be we can't be in there watching them, but we want them to be productive. We want them kind of doing our stuff and not just kind of an open run. So then that'll take us right into official practice, and we'll get going that way.
Okay, so before we get into the official practice season, I mean, in the off season, you said there's a ton of time spent there in strength and conditioning. You know, how many hours a week or how many hours, you know, per day, how many days per week are you guys usually going?
Yeah, so the rule is there. We get 8 hours a week with the players. Two of them can be on the court, and then we'll use the other six for strength and conditioning. So we typically, you know, they're kids too. They want to have their summer, so we typically like to try to keep it Monday through Friday. If there's sometimes they'll throw a run in on a Saturday, but so that's 6 hours. You can get a lot done in 6 hours, obviously, you know. And you don't want to overwork them. You don't want to do too much, but at the same time, you want to get after them a little bit and see what they, you know, see how much weight they can put on, see how, you know, if they can grow their body and add some skill sets that way in the weight room.
Yeah, and take care of their nutrition as well. If they want to put that weight on, they got to make sure they're eating well. I know you guys got all the things needed up there as far as, you know, the well-rounded dietary things and the supplements and so on and so forth from what I remember working the camp there before. Are they able to get then meals, meal plan stuff during the year as well? Is that provided for them?
Yep. So we do really well with our meal stuff. So they'll also be in summer school, and that gives us the, you know, that's why we can work them out. They'll be taking classes, and they have what's called a red card, and they'll get money loaded to that so they can get meals, and that's kind of set up at different restaurants and things. And, you know, the strength and conditioning and sports nutrition staff will put like shakes together and all that stuff to help them with their bodies and recovery. And, you know, hopefully we're making, there's a long list of things you can have and can't have, you know, as far as what they're putting inside their body. So we got to make sure, obviously, with NCAA restrictions, that we're, you know, following the rules that way, not giving them something that, you know, is illegal. And so our sports nutrition staff does a great job with that, and the guys like it too. You know, they put the superfoods and all this stuff in a little shake, and they'll blend it up, and yeah, they like that part of it. So yeah, they're taken care of that way.
And then do, when it comes to like some of the meal planning, are those just like recommendations, or do they also have some meals kind of provided for them as they're getting done, or is that just in their dorms? What's that meal plan situation look like in a little bit more detail?
Yeah, so we can do a little bit more when we get them back in season. So like in the fall, we'll do like post practice meals together. We'll have a lunch, you know, set up for them, so they know whether it's in between classes or when that's provided. And and the strength conditioning and sports med, everybody's on the same page. Like if it's let's say it's a Nate Reavers, for instance, and he wants to put on weight, you know, that's a big goal of his. We got to make sure that he's getting enough calories. And a lot of that, and some of that comes down to them too. Like, you know, we're around them a lot, but they're having, you know, they're on their own a lot too. So they, you know, we get them for 2 to 3 hours a day. You know, what are you doing with your other time? Are you, you know, can you cook meals at home? Are you, you know, getting enough calories? So it's surprising, you know, over the course of, you know, my career, you know, I'll ask a guy that's struggling to put on weight. I said, have you ever tracked your calories before? You know, how many calories? And they're like, oh no, I haven't. I was like, oh, well, here's an app, you know, download this MyFitnessPal, and I want you to put every meal you've had in that app and kind of see where your calories add up to. And a lot of times they're just not eating enough. They're not getting enough food. So, you know, just got to make sure that everybody's on the same page. They know what their goal is, and they're taking the right steps to get it done.
Exactly. And just having the right amount of, you know, energy intake, energy expenditure, you know, keeping those extra 500 to 1,000 calories a day and eating the right foods. That's something you hear that so much. You know, I'm lifting and, you know, I'm getting a little bit stronger, but why am I not putting on the muscle? It's like, well, you if you don't eat well and sleep, you're not going to be putting on the muscle, bro.
Yep, absolutely. There's no doubt about that.
So all right. So that's kind of the setup there. So you guys got a Monday through Friday, 8 hours for that week in the off season, six of those hours spent to the strength and conditioning, two of those hours kind of spent towards the skill development. And then they have the summer school there, a class or day, a couple hours, something like that. Nothing too stressful.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Yep. And then, then they have some time off in August, they get back, and now it's school starts, everything's starting up late August, early September. How does that schedule change then with strength and conditioning, and then with stuff on court with the team and then school? I mean, what's the 9 to 5, or what's the daily schedule at that stage?
Yeah, so when classes start back up, we continue on with our 8 hours. That's what the NCAA allows us. So, and we're big on academics and making sure, like, all these guys, that's a big thing with Coach Guard, is he stresses is all these guys, at some point the ball is going to stop bouncing. So whether you play in the NBA for 10 years, maybe play overseas for 2 years, at some point you're going to need your degree, and you're going to need to get a job and move on from basketball. So he really wants to make sure that these guys are taking advantage of everything that we have on campus, because obviously we have a great academic institution. Our alumni resources are unbelievable. They're all over the world. And so he really stresses that for them. And we'll let them have the first couple of days just for academics and to get settled into their, their routine before we start really grinding on them, because the season's so long as it is. We got to make sure that everything's set up that way for them to be successful before we even touch a basketball that way. So once they're settled in, they'll have class, for the majority of the day. We're lucky enough to where we get a time blocked off for men's basketball. So they'll meet with their academics and make sure their schedule's all good to go. And let's say, for instance, if we're early, they'll have 1 to 4 blocked off, for an example. In their schedule. So, in that time, that's when we'll work out in the fall, or if we're on the court that day, everybody would be on the same page that way. And then that'll just kind of flow. So then we'll do our 8 hours, the guys will go to class all day. We'll do, whether it's strength or on the court workout. And then a lot of them will have night classes too, or online and stuff for them to work on. So that'll kind of take up the late afternoon into the night. And then, when we start practice, official practice, we'll practice in that. If it's a 1 to 4 slot, we'll practice in there, watch film, everything we need to do men's basketball in that slot. And then a lot of times, these guys are going to class, but there's a lot of recovery time too. So, you walk down by the training room, they're in there doing their stretches, rehabbing injuries, their post-workout recovery stuff. So a lot of times everybody thinks, when you're young, you can go in there and practice for a couple hours and then you just go home and continue day. It's not the same with these athletes, because they practice and play, basically year round. So there's a lot of work that goes in that way. So a lot of times, especially if you've got an injury, you're in the training room probably an hour before practice if you don't have class, and you're doing things. And then obviously your post-practice, you're going to be in there recovering as well. Because if you do all those little things, then your body's going to be ready to go in March, and you're going to be able to be successful through a whole season. If you skip some of those steps, then that starts showing up as the season goes on.
Right, right. Now, so you're saying you get them when they're in that preseason there, you only get them 8 hours a week. But if you have 1 to 4 blocked off, is that just like a couple times a week then? And then when an official practice starts, you get more than the 8 hours, or what, how does that work?
Yeah, so in the preseason, let's say with those 8 hours, let's say it's a Monday, and we're going to be on so we have an app that's called Teamworks, and the schedule will be posted on that app, and it gets updated all the time. So the guys will look on their app, and they'll see, they'll know Monday we're going to be on the floor from, let's say, 2 to 3. We're going to be on the floor an hour. Tuesday we're going to lift from 2 to 3, and then they'll just kind of follow the schedule that way. We can't go above and beyond 8 hours. So that's kind of our restrictions there in the fall. And then, Yep. And then when we get to normal practice, there's a certain hour allotment that we can't go over. So we're tracking that on the side to make sure, we got
8 hours as well, or is that?
No, that's, that opens up. Right? Yep. That opens up. And then, so we got to give one off day a week. So if it's a competition day or a practice day, we just track those to make sure that, obviously we're giving them one day and we can't touch them on that day off. So that we can't do any film. It's completely off on that one day. So you know, we'll use it, you know, the way the schedule lays out. If let's say we have to go, there's been some scenarios when we had to, if you practice or play a game on 7 consecutive days, or maybe you practice or play a game on 8 or 9, then we have to take 2 days off that next week to compensate for not having, so that they do allow us to do that.
Okay. All right. So what's your time allotment that you get with the kids per week? Anywhere from like 8 to 20, like just, you don't, we're not going to say exact numbers here, obviously, but a ballpark, what does that look like?
Yeah. So early on, like we'll practice probably 5 times a week, and you know, there's a lot of implementation early on in practice. So, you know, we might be going 2-hour practices early on, you know, so it might be 10 hours on the floor, maybe, you know, maybe an hour of film for, you know, just for an example. And then as the season goes later, you know, the bodies, you know, there's a lot of studies out there that show, you know, the more time, you know, as the season stacks up, you stack all these 2-hour practices on top of it, that, you know, you're getting into your body deficiencies. So, you know, there's some times in February, March that we'll get in there, we'll practice hard for an hour. We'll make sure we're getting all our scouting report specific stuff in, and we'll get out of there. You know, we'll hit them hard for an hour, and then that'll be it. You know, because if you're going for 2 hours, it starts to become counterproductive.
Right. The acute to chronic workload, so to speak, you can kind of ramp things up, you know, a little bit higher, you know, and you might have a little bit of more injury proneness in that little bit of time. But then if you do that the entire season, so to speak, and don't crank off in the intensity or time or something, then that's when those injuries start to pull in, so to speak, you know,
yep,
a little bit more.
Yep, for sure.
Okay. And then, you know, then season ends and, you know, whenever that may be. And then at that stage, what, you just kind of give them a month, or what happens there in that first part of the off season?
Yeah. So it'll kind of depend on how the season went. So if we play, you know, late into March and it's a long year, you know, we'll give them 3 or 4 weeks off just to, you know, for them to recharge. And, you know, then that leaves us with, on the back end before school lets out, that spring period, that doesn't leave us with a ton of time. You know, it's only 2 or 3 weeks if the season goes how we want it to. But the 1 year when we had all the injuries with Brad and Trice and Kobe getting hurt, we were done. We didn't play in March, right? So, you know, those guys were chomping at the bit, and we actually had a great spring. That was a great spring. I remember back that because so disappointed on how the season went out, that a lot of those guys wanted to get back in the gym and start working. So a lot of it depends on how the season goes and kind of, you know, how their bodies are. We'll take a temperature of, you know, how hot are they running? Are they, you know, they need more time off, or, you know, can we get them back in there right away?
Right. Right. Okay. So, I mean, that's kind of the structure of the year. Let's talk a little bit about this year. 'Cause there was, you know, you guys overcame a lot of adversity. A lot of adversity. I mean, yeah. Obviously, as everyone knows, you know, Kobe King made that decision to leave, and he was, you know, he was one of the main guys. And how did, you know, what was that scene or that feeling in that locker room at the time? And, you know, how were guys able to turn it around mentally, if there was a need for any turnaround? I mean, just talk to like what it was and what it became.
Yeah, so obviously Kobe, everybody in the locker room liked Kobe, and it was kind of a shock at the time, because we're kind of in the heat of a Big Ten, you know, run, and, you know, we all love, you know, it's one of our brothers walking out of the locker room. So it was tough on the guys. It shook them a little bit right away. But they all knew, like I've mentioned a couple times, our leaders in our locker room are unbelievable, kind of some of the best I've ever been around. And they kind of, they looked at each other and said, hey, you know, nobody's feeling sorry for us. You know, when we play Michigan State, they don't care that somebody left, or, you know, Brad was suspended for a game. No, nobody cares except the guys in this locker room. So either we're going to bond together and we're going to do this thing, or, you know, we're going to crumble. And it's a credit to all those guys and Coach Guard's leadership for, you know, walking through that. And, you know, obviously there were some other things that kind of went down, and those guys just stuck together and kept battling. And then when shots go in, it gets fun. So those guys are tough.
yep.
So those guys are tough and good leaders. And obviously we're playing, you know, skill-wise, we're playing at a high level too down the stretch there.
So let's talk to that leadership a little bit. I mean, some of those guys that are coming in that have been in that locker room have been in some up and down times. I mean, how is that leadership kind of cultivated and developed? I mean, what is consciously done to, you know, I'm sure they got to first kind of learn how to follow, so to speak, but then eventually learn how to lead. Like, what processes do you guys go through as a program to allow those guys to be able to step into those roles and really, you know, lead from within?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, the first off, it starts in the recruiting process. Like, we want to make sure that we're recruiting high level character players and athletes. You know, sometimes everybody gets caught up in, oh, you need the five stars to win, or you need this kind of player. And it's a lot of times, you know, that's not our process. It's finding about how the player is as a person, you know, how is he as a student, and then can he fit a Big Ten style of play? So, you know, that starts early on, you know, with that kind of stuff. And we've been able to do a nice job of bringing in really good kids. And then when they get here, you know, the senior leadership has been huge. And, you know, we kind of, in our film room, the front row is usually freshmen and newcomers, second row, sophomores, juniors, all the way to the back of the room is kind of our seniors and our leaders. And Coach Garden film, he'll make a point a lot of times in film. He'll say, you know, you may not be on the film right now in that front row, you know, some of the freshmen coming in, but learn from these mistakes. You know, if Trice makes a turnover, you know, he's pointing to some of these younger guys saying, hey, you know, make sure you're learning from these older guys. And then our older guys know too that it's a part of their job to teach the younger guys. Coach Gard will say a lot that, you know, player led teams are the best teams, you know, because, you know, if you got Brad Davison coaching, you know, a guy on the floor before a coach even has to say a word, you know, that just goes so much farther than, you know, always having one voice, always having the coach have to make the adjustments. So our older guys definitely have taken a step up, and it's nice that we got a lot of them coming back. So we're, you know, we should start five seniors next year. So that's a good thing. And, you know, with such a talented recruiting class coming in, you know, it'll be their job to teach the young guys and help move them along as well.
So what type of conversations do you have with those? Obviously you have when you're recruiting, you have the conversations with the kids, but who else are you talking to? You know, and I've had some of these conversations with Howard, you know, beforehand when we were up there, and he did a great job explaining that. But if you in your own words could explain, you know, the other groups that you are speaking to learn about the character of the kids and some of the key questions that you're asking, you know, how do you find those high character players?
Yeah, so we'll dig on a lot of people, kind of anybody that is in the network of a player. We'll try to get their perspective of the kid. So that obviously that starts with the parents, you know, how are their parents? How did they raise the kid? You know, what are their values? What are the kid's values? And then we'll branch off into the people that surround him. So first off, it'd be your high school coach, or second off, it'd be your high school coach and AU coach. You know, how does he, is he a coachable kid? You know, is he good in the classroom? Does he like being part of a team? You know, how are some of those qualities? And then we'll branch even farther. Then we'll talk, like if we do a, you know, a classroom visit or a school visit, we'll talk to their teachers. You know, we'll talk to anybody that, you know, is in a leadership position that has worked with that student. Because sometimes, you know, you talk to some AU coach and high school coach, they'll tell you maybe what you want to hear. Like, yeah, everything's really good. But, you know, you'll talk to their English teacher who really doesn't even know basketball, but maybe they'll say like, yeah, he doesn't do a homework, or, you know, maybe he skips class. Like, and those are kind of some red flags that might pop up, you know? So we try to talk to everybody, principal, guidance counselors, you know, we'll try to do our homework that way. Cause obviously, you know, at a high level, you know, these spots are so sought after. So we want to make sure that we're doing our homework on our end as well.
Right. Yeah. And that's, again, that's stuff I'm hearing time and time again, where it's emphasize, but I don't think kids on just they really don't get it a lot at that. I mean, some understand that in the way they've been raised and brought up of like, hey, this is how I need to be. And some you can tell until you're blue in the face, and they just don't get it. You're trying to help them so much as a coach, you know, and it's, you know, they might be as skilled as you are looking to find, but then those other off the court things can hold them back.
Yep, there's no doubt about that. And it's a learning process too, you know, from, you know, obviously from a young age, like, you know, sometimes you just don't get it till you make the mistake, and then you got to learn from it. But what problem is with us is kids making continuous mistakes and not learning from it. So, you know, even at the college level, guys are going to make mistakes, you know, on the court, off the court. You know, they're going to skip class when they're not supposed to, you know, and we're going to talk to them and say, hey, this is your action. It's incorrect. Either you change it and figure it out, or it's going to start showing up. You know, it's going to start showing up in minutes, you know, and then it might get to a point where that you just don't have a role on our team anymore. So, you know, so just, you know, kids are going to make mistakes. We know that, you know, it's just learning from them and getting it corrected.
So, all right. So let's kind of take what you said there, and you're recruiting a kid, and maybe there are some, you know, red or yellow flags that are coming out from, you know, teachers or guidance counselors. Is that then a conversation you have with the kid and the parents? Say, hey, we have still have interest, but we have to see some of these changes. Or is that something like you just track and you see if they learn how to do it on their own?
Yeah. So it's always a teaching point for me personally. And I think for our staff, like, you know, if it's, you know, maybe it's a kid we really like, he's got a great personality, he's a good basketball player, but, you know, he's just struggling in English or math or whatever it might be, you know, then we'll just decide to, we'll figure it out. Like, hey, what's the problem here? You know, maybe they just don't understand it or they don't like it. And, you know, then we'll try to make it a teaching point to get them help too. So we have great academic resources, whether it be tutors or Mary Weaver Cleason. You know, our academic office, is it somebody, you know, that just needs to pay a little more attention and a little more attention to detail, and we'll try to help them through that. You know, obviously if it's to, you know, to get into the school at Wisconsin, there's a lot of high academic standards. So, you know, you have to be, you know, hope this for the high school kids, you know, it starts as a freshman, you know, when you get into school as a freshman, you got to make sure that you're taking care of business right away if you aspire to be at the highest level. You know, obviously there's different really good basketball levels between, you know, junior college, Division III. There's a lot of good basketball out there. But if you aspire to be at the highest level, you got to make sure that those things are getting taken care of right away.
Right, right. So even when you're recruiting, if you see some of those flags, that's just a teaching point. Then you're just like, hey, this is what we're seeing. This kind of has to improve. You know, obviously if you're on campus, you can be a little bit more hands-on. But if there are some that you're interested in, it's just like, hey, we need to see some changes here, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just trying to help them through it. Like we won't never rule a kid out. Obviously if academic standards aren't even close to being admitted to Wisconsin, then yeah, that's a player that we probably can't recruit. But if they're at least trying and showing progress, we'll definitely work with kids that way.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. So let's, you know, one of the other things we've spoke out about a little bit is just that ability of those leaders to, I'm sure, not just talk about things in the locker room, but also then do things on the floor. I mean, that also takes a lot of toughness. I mean, what else is done within the group, within the locker room, within the program to kind of make athletes, you know, more or less mentally tougher, where they're not distracted by outside external things. They'd stay, you know, with that tunnel vision of, hey, this is, you know, this is our team goal. This is what we want to accomplish. How are you able to create that focus, that discipline, and that mental toughness?
Yeah, another good question. A lot of it, again, comes back to the first step with recruiting. So Coach Krabanoff, one of his famous lines that he'll use, I don't know where he got it, but he'll say, if you want a kid that dives on the floor, then you got to recruit a kid that dives on the floor. You know, part of that toughness thing. So like, you know, if you watch a kid, like we watch these kids a lot of times when they're freshmen, sophomores, all the way through seniors, and you could pick up on things like, you know, when you can look at a kid and you could say, yeah, he's a good shooter. I can watch him for 3 years and I see that he makes shots. But if he's never dove on the floor once in those 3 years, you can't expect him to show up and start doing that kind of thing. So toughness is something that we can kind of see and watch and you kind of know by, you know, following a kid. But, you know, as far as developing that when they get here, we'll talk with them. And a lot of times we'll just show them on film. You know, we'll be in team film settings. And let's say there was an opportunity for a 50-50 ball or a toughness play and the player doesn't make it. And, you know, we'll show them, the coach guard will show them on film and they'll point it out and he'll challenge them to get better in that area. You know, there's one player specifically that this year that came a long ways in that. And he showed up on film a lot of times over the last 2 years on toughness plays, and we just kept challenging him. So guys can get better at it. You know, I've seen it firsthand with this group, with that player. But a lot of times it starts, you know, it's just in your DNA already. Like Brad Davison was taking charges and diving on the floor, you know, from the time he was playing youth basketball. So that, you know, that kind of stuff just continues to grow, and it's part of your DNA a lot of times. But it definitely can get better. But I think, you know, just calling out a kid is one thing. Like, you can yell at them and challenge them on the floor, but when you show them, I think that's when the real teaching comes in play. So if you can show them on film, and the player will admit it too, like, you can't, the film doesn't lie. That's something else that we'll tell our guys, like, you know, you can't lie to the film. It's right there. So we'll show the guys that, and like I said, we got good kids and good leaders, and they'll try to make improvements with whatever we're trying to help them with. So it's been good that way.
So within that, you talked to some quantifiable things as far as, hey, you didn't take, you know, a charge here. What are the non-normal metrics that you guys kind of chart in practices and in games? You know, a lot of times you hear people diving on the floor, taking charges, offensive rebounds, deflections, et cetera. What are some of the key things that you guys chart to point to? Hey, it's not just rebounds and assists and points, but these other things are extremely valuable to us as well.
Yeah, so some of those things you just touched on, we'll definitely chart, like deflections, charges, some of those little things. And a couple one, like, our video coordinator's big on screens, so he'll track, like, really good screens. Like, how are you doing there? We'll chart, obviously, charges, like you said. I'm trying to think here, some of the stuff that we'll look at. Post touches is another one. So that's not a stat that's going to show up in the paper or any highlights, but anytime we'll track post touches in practice. So if anybody makes a good post feed and get a catch, then we'll track that. Cause obviously with toughness, we want to get the ball to the paint. We want to get the ball to our playmaking big guys. So, you know, who can, you know, make a really good post pass. We'll track paint touches as well. So who's, you know, who can drive and get to the paint. So you can get to the paint off of a pass, obviously off the dribble. So we'll track those things.
Okay, and when you're talking about the screens, is it just, you know, the guy hitting someone, or is it on the both end, the guy that actually sets up the screen and then the guy that actually runs and tries to headhunt and hit the guy?
So the guy's setting the screen, so we'll call it screen to assist. So if you set a screen that leads to a basket, well, that'll be a tally mark. So it's kind of neat to see. It'll get guys, you know, screen a little bit more and a little bit more attention to detail. And a lot of times, if you want something done as a coach or as a staff or a program, you know, put a statistic to it. Like, if you want the ball to get to the paint, then you better be tracking paint touches to, and then, you know, maybe put a bonus point. So if we're doing a 5-on-5 segment with regular scoring and we want to emphasize offensive rebounding. So let's say, you know, if you get an offensive rebound, we'll give you +2 points. And you wouldn't believe the number of guys that'll start crashing if you put a point on it. And then, you know, you do that enough times, all of a sudden you might find a really good offensive rebounder out of it. So,
sure. Awesome. All right. So let's go a little back to the recruiting piece. One of the other things you came out with, you know, one of the layers or the pieces within the network of the player that you speak to are the parents. Let's talk a little bit to, you know, what you see from a, you know, recruiter standpoint that are positives from parents and then are negatives that you've seen on the recruiting trail.
I think the positives is just, and we got a lot of really good parents in our program. And I think the positives is just being there for your son or daughter. I think a lot of times these players put enough pressure on themselves to succeed, and they all want to be good. But I think, you know, some of the negatives, and we haven't had to deal with it here, but putting too much pressure on your kid, just trying to, like, you know, a lot of times win or lose, you know, they got to come home and be, you know, your son or daughter and watch Netflix and be a normal kid too. Like, just putting too much pressure on them, I think, has been a negative that I see kind of not here, but just as an overall picture.
Right. How do they put pressure on from your perspective? Like, what are things they say or do that become, you know, that give them that sense of being pressured?
Maybe more of like just a coach at home. Like, you know, obviously you got your coach and your assistant coaches on your team, and they're doing the things and telling you what they want to get done to succeed. But then when they come home, you know, if the parents are telling them, you know, maybe something different, or they're saying, hey, this is how it should be, you know, that just gets confusing for the kid because they don't know. This is more towards like high school probably.
Right.
But,
well, you'd be surprised. I've seen it at lower levels.
there's no doubt. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, and it puts the kid in a tough spot too, because it's, oh, do I side with my coach over here? Do I side with my parent? So it's nice if parents are just, I'm going to say cheerleader, but for lack of a better word, but, you know, just be there for your kid. Let them know that they're putting enough pressure on themselves, and And we've had some parents that have been coaches too, or are current high school coaches. So, you know, that's great, because, you know, sometimes they'll say, you know, what can I work on with the kid? You know, we'll just say, just be a dad, rebound, you know, don't try to do too much. But, you know, it's good when they want to be active in their child's life. And, you know, hopefully it's kind of a cool experience too, when you go home, or, you know, it's a Sunday, you can go in the gym with your dad and get shots up, or, you know, go through some drills. I think that's cool. But, you know, when you're getting too involved and, you know, second guessing the coaching staff, they put enough pressure on themselves. They don't need that extra level of pressure, I would say.
Right. Right. All right. So let's segue. I wanted to go back into, I'm just kind of going through my notes and everything that we've been talking about so far. Let's get on to kind of your role. So your role, you've been doing the assistant. You were the assistant director of basketball operations. And this year you moved on to some more of the coaching and recruiting aspect of the thing. So talk about what your role was as an assistant director of basketball operations, and, you know, what you've transitioned to.
Yeah. So first off, the assistant director of operations. Yeah, that's my title. So it's a lot of behind the scenes stuff. So in my current role with the NCAA rules, you can only have 3 coaches on the floor at a time. So that's not my role. So it's a lot of, so I have a coaching background with at the small college level. So this was an opportunity, obviously, to come back home and work for a great program. And it's been awesome. It's been a great 4 years. So a lot of my stuff is behind the scenes though. So it's a little bit more hands off than what I'm used to, but it's been awesome. So, and then this summer with Coach Moore's injury and not being able to be with the program, Coach Gard let me go on the road recruiting and do some evaluation of, you know, some of our players, and, you know, going through the AAU scene with recruiting and scouting that way. So that was great to kind of get back out on the road and see some players and watch our guys that, you know, we had some good commits coming in. So it was great to see them and kind of pay attention to them a little bit. But as far as like day to day, you know, my job in practice is kind of sit on the side and evaluate, and kind of when you're not emotionally on the floor with the guys, you can really see some things. So I'll talk to, you know, our assistant coaches and Coach Gard kind of about what I see on the side. I'll manage our playbook. So if Coach Gard puts in a set or something, then I'll make sure I'm paying attention with that and kind of putting it on our play card and managing that portfolio that way. And then I'll do some scouting report stuff too. So each assistant coach will kind of take teams and we'll kind of split the schedule up throughout the season. And then I'll be watching kind of player personnel. So I'll take like Cassius Winston for Michigan State, for example, and I'll watch every shot that Cassius Winston will take on the season. And then I'll kind of put it into different analytical categories. And what is Cassius really, really good at? What is he trying to get done? And what are some things that we need to emphasize? Whether it's, you know, for a simple analytic, you know, right versus left, you know, what are percentages going right? What are percentages going left? And then really try to dive in from an analytical perspective on what really makes some of these players tick. And then I'll give that information to our assistant coaches, and they'll put that with their scouting report sometimes, and they'll use it to emphasize or just different little player personnel things that way.
Gotcha. And within the analytics, how deep do you go within that? Because obviously that's one of the kind of buzz things that are happening in the NBA the last couple of years, as far as, hey, if we use this metric, we can expect this. If we can use this metric, we can expect this in terms of wins and losses and, you know, point differential and so on and so forth. You know, how deep do you get into that?
As a support staff and coaching staff, we want to give all the information to the coaches. But at the same time, you can almost do too much with analytics, right? Like we have a great program. You know, it's been proven over decades that our system works. You know, just because, you know, an NBA team might be doing something analytically, or everybody thinks it's the new thing, a lot of times that doesn't really change what we do. So we look at it, we process it, we get all the information, we give it to the coaches. But a lot of times, you know, I might do like a 2-hour project and it might not go anywhere, you know, but maybe I'll do a 2-hour project on like Cassius Winston and we'll be able to pick up one little analytical thing. You know, maybe it's, you know, coming off ball screens to his left hand. He's not shooting those very well, right? For an example. So you know, we look at all the numbers, but at the same time, we like to keep it simple with our players, give them our certain program standards, and then hold them really accountable to those simple fundamental standards. And then if we do that and the guys get a little bit older, then we can maybe dig in on, you know, some finer details with analytics and things like that.
Right. Okay. Here's another question that I've wondered on this for a while, because ever since I worked at UW camps back in the days, you know, I would see some things posted on the billboards as far as like, you know, this is how do you speak to the media. This is how you deal with social media, et cetera. Talk a little bit to like that education is when the kids come in. You know, how much of it is innate and how much of it is like, hey, you know, when you're being spoke to a reporter, this is how we want to like frame answers, or this is how we want to be able to say things. This is what we want to stay away from to make sure that you don't get those crazy headlines and you make sure the locker room kind of stays together.
Yeah. So a lot of we have a great media team, I guess I would say, with Patrick Herb, the director of branding, and then Brandon Harrison is our social media director that's with us almost every day. So those guys do a great job. They'll have a meeting to start every season, and they'll have a meeting and they'll bring guys in sometimes like an outside company, and they'll search like one of the guys' Twitter, pull up a tweet maybe that they'd had from junior year with a swear word in it or something, you know, for an example. So, and the guys will be like, whoa. And then, you know, our social media guys will then flow into like everything that you say is someone's looking for an excuse to write about it. So, you know, just making sure that they're aware of their power on social media. And it's kind of taken on a head of its own the last, you know, 2-3 years with Instagram, Twitter. You can, there's TikTok. Right. I'm not on TikTok. Right. you see all these guys doing their videos and things, and they're funny with it. They have fun with it, and a lot of times, you know, they've done a good job with supporting each other. So whether they, you know, picking each other up, maybe if a guy had a tough game or something, you know, they do a nice job of being with each other on that. So our guys have done a good job. You know, you see some of the horror stories around the country of guys not using it the right way, and those are good. Those are good lessons too, because, you know, our social media guys in that meeting will pop up. Maybe it's a tweet from another Big Ten player that did something that, you know, he had to retract, or it looks bad about him. Because a lot of times, you know, going back to these guys want to play professionally, what they put on social media is part of their brand as well. You know, so that, you know, when we go through our recruiting process and we're looking at a kid, we'll look at their social media. It's the same thing for these NBA scouts and NBA franchises. If they're going to spend millions of dollars invested into a player, you know, they want to know, is this player going to represent our franchise the right way? So our guys will hear all that, and they've done a nice job of processing it and using social media in a positive light. You'll see Brad Davison will always be posting like certain things to raise awareness for really good groups and try to raise, you know, funds for different groups that need the help. So our guys have done a good job with it.
Okay. So speaking to the social media a little bit, when they're in the program, how much does that play a factor when you're recruiting the kids? Like, is that one of the first things you're going to look at to see what type of person they are? I mean, what, you know, to what degree is that something that is going to influence on a decision on whether or not you're going to further look at the kid?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I think, you know, when you're recruiting a kid, or maybe like let's say we're at an AU tournament, and most of the time we know who we're going out to see and we know who we're going to recruit and things like that. But let's say a kid, you know, has a really nice game. And that's the first thing that I do. Like if I see a player that, you know, looks like a Big Ten player, moves like a Big Ten player, I'm going to search his name on Twitter. I'm going to, you know, pull up whether it's his highlights, what school he goes to, and try to learn just as much information I can about, you know, that player. So I think it's something that coaches, you know, again, it comes back to what's your brand, you know, what do you want to put out about yourself? And I think Twitter and Instagram have certainly done that. So I think it can help young guys. Like let's say you're trying to get recruited, even if it's at a smaller level, JUCO, NAI, Division III. I think Twitter and social media can be a huge positive. Like if I see a lot of times some of these players will have their highlights, you know, pinned to their tweets, or you know they'll put out like congratulations to other players when they get offers and commitments. And I think that speaks a lot to the kid. And, you know, then, and then it can shut it down immediately. Let's say that same player that had a really good game, and I pull up his Twitter and he's posting inappropriate things, or he's not representing himself in the right way. That's right there, the conversation doesn't even start. You know, it's over and we're moving on to the next thing. So I think social media can be used in a really good way, and it also can be used in a negative way and can hurt you. So I think kids hopefully are getting that message. And, you know, when Twitter first come out, there's some tweets like you even see, I can't remember who it was national championship, and some guy found a tweet, something that happened when he was in middle school, you know, that made a mistake, didn't even know probably that would even come up. So it's making our players aware that, you know, anything can be found, anything you put out represents your brand. And obviously you represent the school and the university, and we want to do that in a positive manner.
I think social media is a pretty relevant topic to kind of go into a little bit more detail. So when you're talking about looking at highlights, what are highlights that you're looking at where it's going to continue to create a positive picture? And what are some highlights that you might see that are just like, all right, well, no, you know, is there that line between showing, you know, confidence and ability and, you know, people being full of themselves and cocky? Like where's that line drawn? You know, how is that image crafted in the proper way?
Yeah, I think a good highlight film, because a highlight film can kind of, let's say, for instance, you're a Division III recruit, or, you know, maybe a Division II, or even at our level, like a highlight is just going to kind of give us a little bit of a taste of what you can do. So I think a really good highlight film shows the different skill sets that you might have. Like sometimes I'll watch a bad highlight film and it'll be a minute, and the first 20 seconds will be of the starting lineups and him chest bumping somebody, for an example. And then, it'll be like two dunks. It'll be two dunks. And like, yeah, that's impressive. It shows your athletic ability. But that minute 20 that I just looked at your highlight film, I didn't really get anything out of it other than you had a cool handshake, you know, in the starting lineup. So I think trying to stay away from that, you know, from a production standpoint, it can be good. So I think, you know, and then showing the different skill sets you might have. Like if you're a really good shooter, a really good passer, and you have some athletic ability, I want to make sure that those three things are in there. So like a coach could see that and be like, yeah, he's a really skilled player. I want a full game film now, or I want to talk to this kid or dig a little bit deeper. I think, again, with the social media thing, I think you can make a really good highlight film. And I think there's some ones out there that need some improvement.
Right. And it doesn't have to be extended plays. I mean, a jump shot is, you could fit a lot of jump shots within a couple of seconds. You know what I mean? Like, hey, catch and shoot off the dribble, off of ball screens, off ball screens, pop, 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 pop. Here's this. This is what I can do off the dribble. This is how I find my teammates. You can fit a lot in there, and you don't need to have like plays develop and this, that, and the third. Just kind of show that quick snippet of what you do, you know, to get that interest, so to speak.
Yep, that's a good point, because, you know, if, let's say, and it can be too long too, because let's say it's an 8-minute highlight film, and, you know, and you only have, you know, 30-second clips of a whole play, like you're going to lose the interest of the coach watching it too. So you want it, you kind of want it quick hitting and show the skill sets. And the main objective, obviously, is to catch the attention of the different things you can do and want to make that coach look a little bit deeper.
Right. Yeah. And I had a pretty extended podcast with someone by the name of Eric Stang, who's a national scout with National Prospect ID, I think it was. And he's coached at, you know, Gonzaga and some other places. And, you know, we had a good 40-minute segment of just that. Just how do you put together the right highlight? How do you put together the game film, the purposes of it, so on and so forth. And I just can't emphasize that enough. So anytime I can get that reemphasized by coaches that are in the trenches, so to speak, I try to do that.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. All right. So when you're looking at recruiting, we'll dive into that a little bit more. You know, where do you look? Where do you start? I mean, is it a phone call conversation made by a high school coach or AAU coach? Are you looking at top 20 guys, you know, rated in ESPN? You know, how are people able to get that foot in the door where you're at least going to take a look? You know, what makes people garner interest where you're going to kind of spend some time looking at them?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, with social media, going back to that, it's kind of sped up the process in finding kids a little bit quicker nowadays. So let's say, for instance, 10 years ago, there's a really good player. You might not have heard of the player until he's like a sophomore, junior. Now these kids that are national recruits, you know, you're learning about them as seventh and eighth graders. and we never want to turn down, like, we'll get a ton of calls and emails into the office, and 98% of the time it's a player that probably can't play at the Big Ten level, but there's a 2% of the time where it's like, wow, this kid is pretty good. Like, we need to follow up and see what this kid's all about. So I think, you know, from my perspective, there's been some kids come on the radar just, you know, from a national recruiting service, you know, put out, you know, a quick tidbit about this player, height, weight, and then he's a regional recruit. Let's say he's in Minnesota, you know, obviously we'll know all the Wisconsin, Minnesota kids, but, you know, maybe he's an Iowa recruit, and we, you know, social media sometimes is how we hear about kids for the first time. And then AAU, and then a lot of coaches will call in too. Coach Guard's obviously been doing this a long time, and he has guys that'll call that he trusts in different parts of the country that'll say, yeah, I think this kid fits kind of what you guys do. And a lot of times it's, you know, that's how they kind of get on our radar. And then it's up to us to do the evaluation too. So we'll watch, you know, highlights, game, full game films. And then we got to make sure that we watch them live and we get a really good feel for what the player is. You know, I think a lot of times some of these programs are operating where, you know, they'll see a kid one time and they'll offer him a full scholarship. We don't typically operate like that. We want to, you know, we want to make sure that we're seeing this kid over time, and, you know, how he develops, how he is as a person, you know, how he is in academics. And, you know, sometimes that, you know, maybe that might hurt us with a kid because we're not offering him as quick as he wants. But at a lot of times those scenarios work out for the better. You know, the kids that want to be here that we trust and know, and they're good enough that, you know, we'll eventually find them and we'll go down that road. But yeah, the process is starting younger. So, so we definitely hear about these kids. And then, you know, we don't rule any kids out too, because we know player development will happen too. So maybe, you know, maybe the kid that we'll see at a young age and he'll be too small, or, you know, there'll be something there that, you know, just doesn't quite make sense. But, you know, we'll track them and follow them and watch their AU games. And, you know, maybe they, you never know, kid grows. You know, Ethan Happ started as a point guard, a guard in high school, and then all of a sudden now he's a 6'9", you know, forward that can handle it, can go down low. And, you know, he's an old Big Ten player. So we know player development and human growth and development can happen. So, yeah, we never want to rule a kid out. And, you know, and then you go back to where we look. You know, a lot of, you know, our best recruits have been really regionally, you know, in the Midwest region. You know, occasionally we'll go out of region like – Aleem Ford, for example, is from Georgia. So occasionally we'll go out of region to get a really good player and a really good kid to bring in. But we've done really well, obviously, in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and regionally in Ohio with Nigel Hayes and some of those guys. With Lauren Bowman coming in next year from Michigan. So a lot of regional Midwest guys that kind of know what Wisconsin basketball is all about, know who we are, and want to be a part of it, want to be a part of a winning culture and a winning family. So that's kind of a quick snippet there.
Yeah. So when you're saying, like, guys know who you are and what you guys stand for, what, in your own words, what does the UW-Wisconsin-Madison program stand for? What's your identity? How do you play?
Yeah, so I think the best guys that have succeeded here at kind of our brand is they know it's a three things. It's academics, it's athletics, and then it's off the floor and community. So, you know, we want guys to be able to, you know, succeed in all three of those areas. If a guy has maybe one of them, maybe he's a really good basketball player, but he doesn't fit the other two, you know, that I don't know if that equates to being a really successful Badger. You know, so the best guys have been able to do all three and do all three things really well and represent, you know, not only our program, but the school in general. So yeah, I'd say those three things.
Okay. And when you're looking from like a athletic skill point of view, you know, size, height, weight, et cetera, I know obviously it's going to differ from position to position, but I mean, what's kind of the general guidelines that you're looking for from like a physical and skill standpoint?
Yeah. So obviously in the Big Ten, our forwards and kind of our bigger guys have to be, you know, at a certain height, weight. You know, there's guys that get more done at a 6'7" level than some 7-footers do. You know, so it's just, you know, it's not only about body, but it's how you use your body on the court too. Guy coming in next year, for example, Ben Carlson, 6'9", he plays like he's 7'1" sometimes, just by the way he walls up and rebounds and some of the things he does. So you can definitely, you know, we definitely won't rule a kid out that maybe he's an inch too short, or, you know, maybe, you know, but it definitely helps, you know, when you put like look at it like a Frank Kaminsky, for example, like a 7-footer with an elite level skill set. You know, when you can combine those two things, obviously you get a, you know, an All-American type player. You know, an Ethan Happ, a 6'9", you know, 6'8", 6'9", guy that can handle the ball like a guard. Like, when you can combine those elite level skills with a really good size, and that's when you can really have something special.
Right. And then, so we covered the guard, 6'7", and above. Obviously, there's some give and take there, and whether or not you can play bigger than your size. If you're a center, probably, you know, at that 6'10", 7-foot range, you know, even going all the way back to, you know, Brian Butch and some of those other guys, Steamsma, you know, Steamboat back in the day. Yeah. What are you looking at for from that guard perspective?
Yeah, from the guards, you know, our guards are like, specifically our point guards have been really good. Obviously, you got to have an elite level ball handle and skill and just a really good feel for the game. You know, there's different, you know, we've had different players have a little bit different skill set. Like, I'm thinking of Bronson Koenig, for example, who was an elite level shooter. But, you know, maybe he probably didn't get really good at getting to the rim and finishing at the rim till later on in his career. So that's a skill that, you know, we had to develop over time. And you look at Trice, you know, Dimitri Trice, our current point guard, who's, you know, an elite level shooter as well. He's got a really good pull up game too. Now it's how do we develop his game so he's really finishing high level at the rim and he's a threat at all three levels. You know, that's something that we'll continuously work on and talk about. And then you got other guys. I'm trying to think. You know, then you got to obviously our shooting guards who have all been really tough minded. You know, guard the team's best player, really good at catch and shoot 3-point. You know, and obviously we've had a lot of those good guys too. So, you know, height, weight, that thing can kind of fluctuate. Obviously Trice is a little bit smaller than a Bronson Koenig.
How tall is Trice?
He's probably 6'1", you know, 6 foot somewhere in there.
Six one. Yeah, exactly. But you recruited a guard out of New York at some point, right? He was a little bit shorter. He was probably like 7, I think it was like 6 or 7 or 8 years ago. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But there was a shorter guy, I think, from out east. And what I'm leading into is, I mean, what, you know, what's kind of that minimum if you're going to be successful because the Big Ten is so big? You know, you're probably not going to go down to 5'2", 5'5". That's pretty small. What's that like minimal that you're looking at?
Yeah, I would, you know, it's tough to put a exact height on it, but because, yep, you know, let's say a kid is 5'9", you know, with shoes, yep, on, and we could probably list him in the program as 6 foot, but you know, what's his, you know, but what's his skill set? Like, is he the best ball handler you've ever seen, and he can get in the paint and create for others and make great passes? Right. Well, then he might be a high major player. But a lot of times that there's a 5'7" guy with his same skill set that's also 6 foot, and he's going to be the guy that's going to be a high major. The 5'7" guy, right, maybe has to go to a mid major or a division two. It's tough. It's such a cutthroat, you know, business that way for scholarships and for roster, yep, spots. But you know, that obviously there's been a lot of small guys, you know, 5'7" that have went on to have NBA careers.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because they're so elite and they can do so many different things, and it doesn't matter. Actually, their height is a benefit, because if you take a 6'4" guy, it's hard for a 6'4" guy to keep a 5'7" guy in front of them. So it's hard to put an exact height on it per se. So it's more comes back to that skill set and what you can bring to the table.
Right. And especially how the game has changed nowadays as well, be with that ability to shoot that with those shorter guys that are developing that range more and more, where they might not even shoot it from as high, but they can shoot it from 30 and still be a threat. You know, they have the floater game and they have those things. So, I mean, the way the game has evolved has definitely, in my opinion, created scenarios where those guys can be more and more useful, since they're not, you know, they're not being posted up on the block so much. I mean, Wisconsin is kind of a difference from that perspective, as far as, because you guys will post up your guards, but that's, the game has changed that has allowed that to happen, I think, in a big way as well.
Yep, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see here, as we're finishing up here. Last thing I'd like to ask all coaches at this level, what do you see some of the biggest issues, maybe at the lower levels, from a coaching perspective, from a player perspective, things that aren't necessarily developed well enough when kids are younger to allow them to play at higher levels?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of times at the youth level, some coaches might, you know, be maybe too concerned about wins and losses and being competitive that way, and really kind of lose focus on what fundamental skills, you know, does this youth player need to learn at this age. And I think you've seen some leagues and some things I've heard where, you know, maybe they eliminate zone defense because they want kids to start learning man-to-man principles and how to guard. And I love hearing stuff like that because that's exactly right. Like, yeah, could you win the game by playing 2-3 zone and making these, you know, 6-7 graders chuck threes? Yeah, probably. But is it really developing that player to be successful, you know, moving forward? So I think that's one. And then two, it's really coaches that maybe run too many plays or like have an offense and like teaching kids how to move on the court because the line tells them to go to the corner or tells them to go here, you know, really teaching them how to play basketball at a young age. Like, how do I screen? How do I ball handle? How do I change direction? You know, some of those fundamental skills that I'm sure every youth coach is working on, but maybe lose focus on how much time should be put to those skills. So I think, you know, that's one thing to, and then don't be afraid to reach out because there's a lot of good, I know USA Basketball is a program. So I think coaches, you know, just don't be afraid to reach out and get resources too. Like, I think USA Basketball even lays it out. Like, if a kid's, you know, 8 years old, this is what he should be doing. Like, I think that's awesome. Like some of that kind of stuff. And I think there's a lot of coaches like myself or anybody else that are willing to, you know, give drills out or give advice on, you know, maybe what a kid should be doing. So I guess for youth coaches, like, you know, a lot of times we want to, even myself, like we know we don't have all the answers and we want to think we do sometimes. So just not being afraid to, you know, over this quarantine period, I've been, you know, listening to online clinics and trying to improve and figure out what other guys are doing. And, you know, it's a constant game as a coach to figure out and keep developing. And the same the way it is a player too. So I think those would be the big ones.
I'm super glad you said that because, you know, after playing in Europe and coming back over here, you know, I was exposed to a lot of systems, you know, from Yugoslavia and from Spain and so on and so forth, in different countries from Yugoslavia, meaning Serbia, Croatia, et cetera, Iceland, so on and so forth. And one of the biggest things I really took away were, number one, I think it was at, you know, 12 years old, 13 years old, they still weren't allowed to play like a 2-3, like any zone. It was all man-to-man concepts. And then in Spain, they weren't allowed to put in pick and roll, I think, until they were like 14 or something, you know, something along those lines where they had these guidelines of you have to build up all these other points to get to this point. You have to learn how to play the game before we put you in these mismatched situations. You got to learn how to play one-on-one and team offense, defense before you put these things in. And I've had a tremendous pushback from some groups of parents and kids, like, well, why didn't you put us in a zone? We can't beat them if we're not in a zone. It's like, yeah, but if you're looking at the big picture, we need to be able to guard. We need to be able to rotate. And these, you know, it's the result today is not you're not going to remember this stuff later on. It's what you build now over time that's going to allow you to play at those higher levels. I mean, the whole purpose of AAU is to be able to compete and get exposure. But if you're just doing things to win at those younger levels, I also firmly believe that is just, it's a waste of time and it's a Band-Aid, you know, over a wound, and it doesn't fix the long-term issues. It just disguises poor fundamentals.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you hit it on the head, and I think the really good youth coaches get that. And, you know, you're probably not putting your youth record on your resume anytime soon. So, you know, the win, like you said, those wins and losses go away. But, you know, if a kid can learn, you know, maybe it's you don't have success right away, but you stick with it and you work, and maybe you learn a lesson by playing man-to-man, and it obviously makes you a better man-to-man defensive team and a better defensive player. So I think a lot of those things definitely carry on.
Exactly. Awesome, Kyle. Well, I'm super appreciative of you taking all this time and walking us through, you know, things that you're doing up there at Wisconsin. And, you know, I'm super happy that you guys ended the way you guys did. You know, I know you had a lot of ups and downs. So congratulations on the year and best of luck moving forward. It's been an honor having you on the show.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric, for having me. It was great catching up.